Trust no one. We are the SpyFi guys, and this is Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. Hello and welcome back to the SpyFi guys, where we cover spy facts, spy fiction, and everything in between. I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And today we are back to the Clancyverse with Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, starring Chris Pine and Keira Knightley.
And Kenneth Branagh. And this is the, so far, last Jack Ryan movie that has been made. Yeah.
And in order to fully embrace the Tom Clancyverse, we are bringing in our Tom Clancy fanboy, Lance, returning after a long absence.
It's very nice to be back. Thanks, guys.
What's the last thing that we had you? It wasn't No Time to Die, was it?
Actually, it might have been.
Wow, that was a while ago.
I know.
Well, yeah, welcome back.
Thanks. See, they need to put out more Jack Ryan things.
Oh, wait, did we cover... When did we cover the show?
We never did.
Was that before or after?
I don't think we ever did.
We didn't know we did. We did.
No, we did season one. We did season one.
We did like one or two episodes of season one. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
So does this mean we've covered all of Jack Ryan's appearances after this episode?
Yes.
I believe so. Yeah.
Wow, there are fewer Jack Ryan movies than I thought.
There's that. I mean, if we want to go into like other seasons of the show, we can. Are they still making that spinoff of that show?
I don't know. Lance?
The last I heard was that they were planning on doing some type of version of Rainbow Six to kind of merge
the Michael B. Jordan show and the,
yeah.
Makes sense.
But I think that's been on the shelf for a while, and I'll be surprised actually if it ever comes off the shelf.
Anyways, so we've got Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit from 2014. This is the fifth Jack Ryan movie. I got that right. October.
And don't we all sound so excited about it?
I know, right?
Red October, Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, Summer of All Fears, Shadow Recruit. Yeah, that's five. And the first one that was not based on any book.
Yeah.
And can you tell?
Just a all little right,
so.
Bit.
So, let's get started. So, as always, we have our poetry synopses. First, we have our haiku. And, of course, here comes spoilers. Spoiler star right now. So, here's the haiku. Love and work don't mix. Chevron wants his revenge. Manhattan again?
Nice.
All right. And then, all right.
I like it.
Now, here is our limerick. There once was a handler named Harper who comes off as a bit of a stalker. He hangs out with a dog when he travels in cog and took Jack for a ride in a chopper.
Wow. In cog. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like they really summarized the movie right there.
That's pretty good.
But of course.
You're not wrong.
But of course, and here is the actual IMDb plot summary. Jack Ryan, as a young covert CIA analyst, uncovers a Russian plot to crash the U.S. economy with a terrorist attack.
Okay. I feel like that many Jack Ryan movie.
Really?
What it sounds like is actually the first season of the show, kind of.
Yeah, definitely season one, and a little bit probably season three, maybe four.
Anyway, so we started in London, where Jack is a student, and we see him find out about 9/11.
Well, okay, I also wanted to say, the first thing we see him doing is sleeping, which I thought was an interesting character choice. Because as we've discussed, nothing in movies is ever accidental. So the fact that they show him sleeping, almost like America was sleeping on 9/11, I think was made intentionally. I was wondering if there was going to be a character thing where he doesn't care, he's like a slacker. And then that turns around. Do you think that was what they were going for?
Trying to just imply that a little bit, but you know they didn't really have enough time to really get into that because you don't want to be, you know, this movie set in your May 25th. You don't want to be stuck in 2001 for that long.
That's right.
Well, and he is going to the London School of Economics, so it's not exactly a slouch school.
That's true.
But
that's
cool. If you look at it from, you know, the time frame, you know, 9/11 was start around, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, our time. So that would have been about noonish or so.
Yeah,
he's taking a siesta.
Yeah, he's taking a little lunchtime nap.
But there you know, it was nothing a cool. Is kind of the best part of the movie, I think. Actually, I thought it was like chilling and a really good way to start things off. But of course, I like that fiction that based on true story stuff, so I'm biased.
I would agree with that. It definitely gave him, you know, a setting to, you know, why he went into, you know, the military. You know,
patriotism, it makes fervor. Sense. And it's interesting. Well, we never get any sort of motivation for why any of the other Jack Ryans joined up.
Well, if you go back to the books, though.
Okay, sure. In the books, yeah.
Yeah, in the books, I mean, he graduates, I think he was an Annapolis grad. And even in The Hunt for Red October, they mentioned that he was at least, he had graduated Annapolis, gone to the Marine Corps, and it was after that where he was in a helicopter accident that, you know, where he was hurt really bad and was medically discharged.
Yeah, right. I didn't feel like we ever really needed an explanation. I always thought he was a patriotic guy who's good at his job and wants to serve his country. It's like asking why John McClane became a cop. He just is.
Yeah, but that would completely go against everything Tom Clancy, where you have to like describe down to the minute detail of, you know, why a toilet works on a submarine.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Everything needs to be explained.
Yep. It does.
Except for the characters. No, even the characters.
I also just like in this man, when he's, you know, sees the TV, that, you know, guy, I don't know if it's a friend or just some random guy, but who at least knows he's American, just comes up to, sorry, mate. But yeah, so because of this, Jack signs up for the Marines. And we go to Afghanistan 2003, where he's trying to send this report about something very suspicious going on to the intel. We also find out that Jack requested this posting because he said, basically, you know, if I'm going to serve, I might as well serve.
Right. Which was good.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
He put his life at risk even though he didn't have to.
I mean, especially going into the Marine Corps. I mean, no one joins the Marine Corps to sit at a desk.
No. So they're in a helicopter as this is all there. He's chatting with two other people. And this is the first time that we actually see the accident, the helicopter accident.
Right. And I'm going to pull a little extra Spy Fight versus Fiction here. And they were not wearing helmets. I feel like that's probably a mistake. I feel like you never take your helmet off when you're in a war, based on what I know from Band of Brothers. Lance, would you care to weigh in?
Well, I mean, I didn't exactly wear my helmet all the time. But definitely when we were, especially like even just driving through downtown Kabul, I mean, you were in helmet, body armor, you know, all the thing. And when we were flying, typically we would wear our helmets and stuff during takeoff and landing. But you know, once we were up in the air, it was a little bit different.
Okay.
But
there you go.
To there, though, we were flying in either a C-17 or a C-130, so significantly higher than what our helicopter is going to be flying.
And so I was I was trying to remember, because I got this mixed up with the TV show, because that they also show the helicopter, but and that one, it's very visceral where they show it. Where this one, it just sort of cuts away after the missile hits.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember. Okay, in Hunt for Red October, the movie, it's mentioned that he's in the crash, right?
Yeah, they just mentioned that he was in a helicopter accident. The helicopter crashed in the Mediterranean Sea.
Yeah. Okay.
I think he may have been the only survivor of it.
Any of the Harrison Ford movies, though?
No, it never comes up. Really,
maybe a passing reference at best.
What about Ben Affleck's one?
Isn't he like afraid of the helicopter in the Ben Affleck one?
He gets in the helicopter. Yeah, I don't. But maybe they don't. Actually, I'm trying to remember if they actually reference it.
I don't think they did.
Also, they don't really reference that he's like a Marine either.
No, I don't think they did.
Yeah. Okay.
which is another reason to hate that movie.
Okay, but yeah, so we've also, he's brought back to the medics, and we hear that he actually dragged with his injury, he dragged the other two men out of that chopper.
That's right.
One of whom I do want to say was a Cincinnati Bengals fan, so he was my favorite minor character.
I did notice that. But yeah, so he's actually sent to somewhere that, you know, I've not been, but I know the name of Walter Reed.
Yes, yeah. It's local in the DC area.
Yeah.
Very well known. Is it no longer open?
It merged with Bethesda Naval Hospital.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's the Walter Reed Bethesda Naval Hospital.
Oh, interesting. I assume they probably didn't film on site.
No,
probably not. They just used the name, yeah.
Yeah. And actually what would have happened is that he would have been, in fact, they even kind of mentioned that they medevaced him to the hospital at Kandahar, which was one of the bigger U.S. bases outside of Kabul. From there, he probably got flown to Launchdal, Germany, which was where they would send all of the severely wounded for a bit. And then from there, he probably went to Walter Reed. Mm-hmm. So it's probably, you know, a decent period of time between the helicopter accident to actually see him in physical therapy.
Well, that, and then we also find out that he's been there 8 months. And also, who's his PT, you know, trainer? None other than Kathy, whose last name escapes me. Mueller?
Mueller. Yeah, Mueller. She's still Kathy Mueller at this point.
Yeah. Of course, longtime fans will know Kathy as his future wife.
Right. Yeah. And I did notice, though, that you know, obviously she was like, I think in her third year or so, she was doing...
Third-year med student is what she says, yep.
Right. And she had even said that, you know, she needed the physical therapy credits to get through school so she could go back to being an eye doctor.
Mm-hmm. Which, so there you go.
Which, okay, that was another one of the few tie-ins back to the Kathy of the books.
Right, right. Because that, well, obviously the one in the show is an epidemiologist. What's the, Michelle Monaghan, Bridget Moynihan? She's just like a general sort of doctor. She's not even like this. At least not that I remember.
Right. And Archer was definitely the eye doctor. And Gates McFadden, a.k.a. Dr. Beverly Crusher,
is barely there.
The Hunt for Red October, is there for a whopping 8 seconds to tell Jack to make sure, you know, he does something with the kids and then is out the door, never to be seen again.
Yep. They finagle a way to have them meet. And we also have Harper, played by Ken Cox. Watching Jack.
And I liked how Jack noticed him watching him. It's like, he's got those Batman skills already.
He does.
But yeah, so he says he wants to talk to Jack. Not yet, but soon. And so we next see him come in dress uniform, U.S. Navy. And yeah, like you said, Jack noticed him last time. He thanks Jack for his service. Also gives him the proper name of John, not Jack like in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he knows his dissertation and the reports he filed because he's with the CIA.
That's right.
My big fear when I saw the Navy uniform was that they were going to try to turn Kevin Costner into James Earl Jones and be an early Admiral Greer. At which point, I don't know if I could have watched it any further.
Is he from the books at all? He's just a made-up character.
I think he's a totally made-up character. I don't recall him at all.
What about, what's his name from Red Some of All Fears? Cabot. Was he from the books or was he made up as well?
No, Cabot was in the books.
Okay.
Cabot was in the books.
He really feels like a stand-in for James Earl Jones at that point.
Yeah.
So we see Kathy leaving Walter Reed. She says that the day that he runs out of there, they'll have dinner. Also, we have Harper waiting for him. To recruit him, says he's going to send him back to school to finish his doctorate, and then he'll join financial intelligence, and he's going to uncover funding for terror groups.
Wow, they've really got his whole life planned out for him right then and there, huh?
which is kind of a combo from the books, because after Jack gets medically discharged, he does go back to school, does financial stuff. Also, I think his doctorate though is in history, if I remember correctly.
That's right. That's why he's at Annapolis.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they kind of like merged the two careers into one with him being the shadow recruit, but also working for the just regular good old fashioned Wall Street financial institution.
Yep. And then we cut to New York City 10 years later, where Jack is working for some investment firm. I think it's called Harmon Brothers is the name on the sign. He helps out a friend of his who bought a motorcycle to impress a crush. And he notices a bunch of very suspicious Russian transactions.
You know, I do appreciate that this is a little bit different, that you get Wall Street spying.
Mm-hmm.
At least at first.
Sends a message to his handler and goes to watch a movie, an old movie, at like one of those, I forget what you call these kind of theaters, revival theaters. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as he's in the theater, he meets a guy that is trying to give him all this details so that someone needs to go to Moscow. But the person he meets is basically like, no, Harper will want you in Moscow. So get yourself to Moscow.
And here we have the standard Jack Ryan line, but I'm just an analyst.
It's like pretty much his catchphrase at this point.
Right? Yeah. It's like the random stormtrooper screaming in every single Star Wars movie. It has to happen there somewhere. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Star Wars has a lot of them.
It's interesting because I noted it later as well. I didn't catch it in this one, but yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, so Kathy arrives back at their place. Jack's not there. He's out running. As she's cleaning up, she finds a ticket stub in his pocket.
Yeah, so and I was like, why are they spending so much time with this, like, ticket stub thing? But then it actually all kind of works.
Sees it, and then that's it. So
it does rely on Jack being the only person in the world to actually keep his movie tickets after it's over. And yes, Christian, that was a shot aimed at you.
What do you mean? Okay.
You might as well weigh in that at me, too, because I did the same thing back when I actually bought paper tickets and didn't do it on my phone.
Well, yeah. To be fair, Christian saves the tickets for movies that mean something to you, right, Christian?
No, I save all of them nowadays. Because, generally, I don't even, you know, like Lance said, we don't, you know, we just buy it on our phones. So if there happens to be an opportunity where I get a stub, I save it.
I see. You never know which movie might become a classic and it'll maybe be worth money later.
Yeah. What also helped me when I first started my Letterboxd, I was able to actually go back through all my old ticket stubs and figure out, oh, that's when I saw that date and actually enter it in. So I actually have at least going back to like probably around 2000 or so, my entire movie watching history.
Nice.
At least in theaters.
Mm.
Anyway, so they go to dinner, they see a newscast that's about, about the dollar and how it's sort of not, you know, it's not acting how the market would think it would act. And then she sort of tries to needle him about the movie's ticket stub, tries to trap him.
That's right.
And he doesn't really respond. He just sort of says, oh yeah, I haven't seen it, you know, yeah, sure, why not?
Well, actually, he never said he didn't see it. He just totally evaded the question and he was like, what I haven't seen is the waiter.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
And just like totally blew off the question. And she just sits there smiling like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That whole part did kind of bug me. I mean, I realized they were kind of trying to set something up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But at this point, you know, I guess we can say that, you know, they're engaged. They've been together for 10 years, which, you know, dear God, Jack, what are you waiting for?
And, well, they explain that, but carry on.
Yeah.
But, like, all of a sudden, she instantly jumps to the conclusion that, oh, I saw a movie stub ticket in Jack's pocket. Oh, my God, he's having an affair.
In another movie, that they would have set that up a bit more. That it wasn't just this. This is only the, the last incident of many. But,
you know what? Right. I wasn't bothered by it. Because he lives such a secret life, he probably talks around his job all the time, just like Eric O'Neill in Breach, an early Spy Guys movie, which also caused tension in his relationship too. So I actually also liked this part. I thought it made sense.
Well, so as I was going to say, I'm going to take this moment now to talk about Keira Knightley's American accent. Were you convinced? I was not.
I didn't notice, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I am not going to lie. Her accent is not what I'm going to be noticing about Keira Knightley.
Well, actually, since we're doing Keira Knightley, she's too attractive in this movie. It's a problem.
I totally disagree with that because, I mean, even in the books and in the movies, Kathy is supposed to be this drop-dead, gorgeous woman.
Hmm.
No, I'm sure. That's fine. But all I'm saying is, I think she's best in movies like Pirates, which are like larger than life, or everything's like heightened fantasy. She's just way more attractive than everybody else in this movie.
You know, thing you have against very attractive women.
I didn't say very attractive. I said,
no, but this is the first time something like this has come up where so you've said someone's too attractive to her for a role.
Well, it's how I feel.
Okay.
I wish you all could see Zach's face right now.
I mean, I think you guys know what I mean, where some people are like too attracted to be a real person.
No. I mean,
no,
it's movies. Everything is heightened.
Yeah, but some work better than others. Anyway, we can carry on.
I'm trying to remember what the other movie was.
Yeah, you're right. I have said it before.
Yeah. So I was like, the fact that I heard it is like, I need to address this.
There you go.
All right. So in Moscow, we meet Kenneth Branagh, who is playing Chevron. I could not.
That's what I thought, too. I wanted to call him Chevron.
I was mixing around with a V and the R and everything. I went, so yeah. Chevron. Do you ever get a first name for him?
I don't think so.
Maybe in the credits.
Well,
Victor.
Okay, yes.
Of course it is.
So he's getting some sort of blood work done, but the guy who's drawing the blood, you know, screwed up something, and then he is beaten by Chevron.
Oh my gosh, I guess he's the bad guy.
Hold on. So how many times has Kenneth Branagh played like a Russian bad guy in a spy movie? Is it just this and Tenet?
I've lost count.
Mm-hmm.
But he was definitely bad in Tenet too.
And Russian. Yeah. But yes, he meets with one of these Russian ministers in the woods. The code phrase for this mission or program is lamentations. Which, of course, the minister says, I know of no such program.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, right. Say no more.
Yep. So, back in New York City, Jack tells his bosses that he wants to go to Moscow. Apparently, there are hidden accounts that he managed to find. He makes it seem like they might be ripping off their company, and that's why he wants to go investigate. And so he's apparently the compliance officer for this organization.
So do you think this is really why he's going, or is it just a cover story?
No, it's a cover story. It's totally a cover story.
Totally a cover story.
Oh, okay.
It's the guy in the theater said, I don't care how, get yourself to Moscow.
Mm. Well, the best way to convince his company to go is tell them they can make money from it.
Or
they're getting ripped
money.
Off.
Or lose avoiding money, right?
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking... millions upon millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. But because this is, you know, probably a multi-million dollar deal, partnering with a company, which is, of course, Chevron's company, you know, his boss always tells him to not screw up this deal and warns him that Chevron is unpredictable. Oh, look, it's in my notes. Victor Chevron, there it is. Is unpredictable. And also that insider trading is apparently legal in Russia.
Yeah, so this reminds me of the book Red Notice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that one?
You've talked about it before, I believe.
Yeah, so it's very briefly, it's about a guy who gets caught up in Russian spy-related things. But the beginning is right after the fall of the Soviet Union. It's like they say in the movie, it's the Wild West for investors. If you're willing to go to Russia and make some deals, you can make a lot of money. It's just a little bit dodgy. And that's what the author of the book does. But then he gets it in over his head. You'll have to read it to find out what happens.
All right, interesting. But so back at their apartment, Kathy doesn't understand why she can't come. She tells him that he found the ticket stub and like asks if he's having an affair, which he promptly denies. And then she tries to sort of get, you know, tag on a trip at the end so they can meet in Paris after he's done with his, you know, business trip.
Must be nice. But the, yeah, again, this is just like Breach. I know I mentioned that before, but yeah.
So Jack gets to Moscow, where he's picked up by private security hired by the Chevron company. As they exit the airport, his security like picks up a gun that he presumably had to check outside.
Yeah, well, this guy's great. He's the best character in the movie. He's so friendly. He's so nice. You know, and I like when he says we're all foreigners, because that way he knows we're not FSB.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
I did like that too.
That was a nice touch. Mm-hmm. And he's driven around Moscow, which always makes me think of that scene. I think it's in Paddington, where you know, like Paddington, the family's coming home from, I think it's a train station, and they're driven around and they see all the landmarks of London, which is of course no actual route would take you that way. And like the cabbie like gives him the giant bill. Like, why, you know, how is it this much? Was it, well, you went entirely around all of London to see all of the different landmarks.
Yeah, we had to drive around in circles.
Yeah. So anytime you have like establishing shots of, oh, we're going to hit every single landmark, I just think of that scene.
Right.
But yeah, so back at the, so at the hotel, Jack is getting registered while the security guy, I think his name's MB, sounds right?
Yeah.
Is, you know, goes to check the room. And then as they get into the room, MB tries to kill him.
Yeah, this is our first and best fight scene.
That's a good fight scene. I did go, like, well, it's also, it's pretty brutal, and it also goes on for, there's a lot of property destruction. There's, it's a, yet another bathroom fight.
Oh, yeah, yet another one.
This, like, when he's, he ends up drowning him, and as he's drowning MB, it did remind me of Daniel Craig in the beginning.
Exactly. Thank you, because I thought the exact same thing, too. It's like, both of them, it's their first kill. It's in a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering why he killed him. Because doesn't he want to know who he works for and what happened?
I mean, yes, he's fighting for his life.
Yeah. It's not like he has the upper hand at some point and says, okay, I'm going to spare you. He's trying to survive.
Yeah,
it's true. He's going to kill him.
Yeah, I would say that.
Like, huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like twice his size and, you know, bringing out the, you know, the cliche, you know, Jack's not a field person. This is his, you know, mm-hmm. thrown to the wolves kind of thing. He's got zero training, doesn't know really what to do. In fact, I think he even said at one point in time that he only had 3 weeks at the farm prior to going to do his thing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, no, plus he's got the adrenaline going. So he's killing him.
Yeah. So he leaves the hotel room, calls his handler, who says she's going to send cleaners. And this is where I noticed the, you know, Jack, I'm just an analyst.
Hmm.
Yeah, she's like, this isn't protocol. And he's like, that may be true, but I still don't know where to go.
Right.
This is I quite like this part. Our hero is not so invincible. Mm-hmm. He can't remember where he's supposed to go. So he's not perfect.
Yeah, it. I agree, and the same. It made him human. Like,
mm-hmm.
again, average, well, slightly above average, but you know,
it's Chris Pine,
closer to an everyman hero than the vast majority of heroes we see here on the Spotify guys. I think it's serious.
Correct.
Yeah. Kathy, while he's around, calls, and he's still kind of freaked out. So he's she's trying to talk to him, but he's just not really in. He says that he's not sure if he can make it to Paris anymore. It's been a crazy day. And so when he finally gets to the meeting point, Harper is there. And he's got a dog with him, which he calls a QP dog or quasi-personnel dog. Which is a dog he just took out of someone's yard to make it look more normal that he's out walking.
I really hope somebody has that for Spy Fight vs. Fiction, because I didn't.
I did not.
I did not either.
Oh, no. We'll have to live in ignorance.
But, yeah, Jack explains to Harper the Russian accounts. And then all of these accounts are buying up U.S. treasuries. The dollar should be going down, but it's actually going up. So Jack has a suspicion that since they're propping up the U.S. dollar so that when they sell, they can collapse the economy, and they'll have it timed to happen after a terror attack.
I was like, Harper... oh boy, this is where the movie started to lose me.
What? Why?
This isn't The Big Short. Yeah, that's right. Oh. No, I did understand it, but I felt like they did spent a lot of time explaining it. They probably didn't need to.
I mean, I will say, go ahead, Lance, I'm curious. What are you going to say?
I was going to say, I can see kind of like over-explaining it a little bit because probably the majority of the people watching this might are not going to be like all keen on how like dollar fluctuations and money things work.
But I appreciated that it was, this is something where it would evolve, you know, where he is at the moment at being at a, you know, an investment firm and as, you know, being part of financial intelligence. Like, it makes more sense that he's here as opposed to if it was, you know, say, a Russian submarine.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, also it reminded me of, like, and it's a, there's a dropped mention of in Casino Royale, back to again, of how, and this was rumored to have happened, but later disproven, that, you know, before 9/11, a bunch of people shorted stocks because they knew it was going to happen. And that's the whole premise of his plan, is that he was shorting a bunch of stocks before this this plane company. So that when their, you know, new prototype exploded, then he would make money betting the other way. So that sort of related to that in my mind of, all right, so it's that kind of thing, but on a larger scale.
Well, I appreciate it because it was actually something a little bit different. I mean, usually you see like, oh, we're going to do this to cause mass panic. You know, no one wants to go to the mall anymore or this, this, and this. You know, but actually like collapsing the economy and like greatly devaluing the dollar. And if you notice too, when the one guy was talking, they were like, well, won't this hurt, you know, the Russians too? And he's like, it'll hurt China a lot more.
And it will really cause a second Great Depression.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Now I understand the stakes. Thank you.
So Harper gives Jack a gun, tells him he's operational now, but that's not how this works. You don't go from an analyst to being an operations.
No, like it's a battlefield commission.
But yeah, so he goes back to his hotel room. It's all cleaned up. He texts Kathy. And then, speaking of Red October... here's where I get some real big Red October vibes, because there's Russian chanting.
Sure.
Yes.
By the way, Lance, were you disappointed? I think this is the one Jack Ryan movie that doesn't have an aircraft carrier in it.
A little bit.
And is it really a Tom Clancy movie without an aircraft carrier? At least it has a helicopter.
I mean, there is no real mention of anything naval at all.
That's true.
Because even in, like, Clear and Present Danger, they had you know, Navy ships and Coast Guard that were patrolling, and that's actually how it started, was the Coast Guard vessel. But yeah, you're right. There's no ships at all.
Yeah, weird. Unless...
not even a rowboat.
I'm trying to think of it, even, like, when they go through New York, do you see, like, the USS Intrepid in a wide shot, maybe?
We'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, really have to like parse through
the one place. Yeah, but anyways. So, Chevron is in a church. He's lighting a candle and saying that, you know, he's going to avenge, you know, everyone. So, Jack arrives at the Chevron's HQ. He sees the security setup, which is very, very impressive. And he meets Chevron, who... he tries to needle about the hidden accounts. Chevron very, you know, says that, you know, well, you could have just done this audit from New York because I sold the companies which concerned you, so there's no need for an audit anymore.
And this is kind of where I had a problem with the earlier fight scene, to where they got the security guy to try to kill Jack, but if they already had an explanation of why the funds were missing and so on and so forth, why kill Jack?
That's a good point. It's because they need an action scene.
which is valid. But other than that, like, if kill Jack, all of a sudden, okay, now that's going to increase suspicion.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know he had a security guard and whatever, and so on and so forth.
Their hope is maybe that, you know, his death will, or his disappearance will go unnoticed in the mass panic that's happening because of everything else.
It does make you wonder what everyone's thinking.
I could buy that.
Yeah. But, so, Jack, as way of apology, invited to dinner that night at the best restaurant in Mosh happens to be a street from Chevron's HQ.
Very convenient. Chevron
asks if his wife, if Jack like them, and he says, I'm not married. I was just told your wife just arrived at your hotel, because he knows.
Which, if he knows that Kathy's at the hotel, he also knows Jack's not married, too.
Yeah.
So he's definitely trying to go on a little fishing expedition.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So Chevron has someone tail Jack out of thing, but Jack, you know, very easily gets away from this guy. Just steps into a surveillance van. So Chevron has someone watching Jack with Harper and Gemma Chan also from both the Eternals and what's that? Crazy Rich Asians.
That's right. And it's like, oh man, I like this. He has a whole crew ready to help him out. Now this feels like Tom Clancy.
But yeah, so
a little bit, yeah.
The idea is to get into the building. They need to get the MacGuffin. I don't remember what it was. Some sort of algorithm, was it? Something like that?
Yeah, they were trying to get into his computer using the electrical grid to do some type of backdoor IT stuff.
It was something that needed to be gotten from the security director's office.
Right.
But, you know, his office would be next to impossible to get into, but funnily enough, Chevron's office would be easier to get into.
Mm-hmm. You know, this scene is quite good. I like that we have some infiltration and that everything kind of more or less holds together. Mm-hmm. That more or less makes sense. But I gotta say, it's bugged me a lot. Why is Jack the one to do it?
Because he's already there. He's already in position.
But
trying to get someone else in there in this time frame. He like even makes a nod to, because he's telling them, all right, your guy's going to have to do this. And like, I'm the guy, aren't I?
Right. And I think probably because if he's going to be looking at the data that's coming in, Jack's probably the only one that could do any type of like quick analysis of what he's seeing, which ultimately turns out to be what saves the day, because he's like, oh, my God, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And besides, it's Jack Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie where the main character does everything. It's one of those.
Mm-hmm. Kathy is back in the hotel room. She found the gun that Harper gave to Jack. And she's like basically giving this whole big speech about, you know, so this is what hints that this is not, you know, the ticket stub was not the first incident, but just the last in the long line of things where she's basically says, tell me I'm not crazy.
Yeah, she says, ack. Get it?
No.
No.
Because her name's Kathy. Do you guys remember Kathy, the comic strip?
Oh,
am I gonna date myself?
Wow.
That's gotta win stretch of the year.
Oh my God.
I mean, well done, but damn.
Thanks. How often do you meet a Kathy in this day and age? Not often, I say.
I've met a few. But not for a bit, but I've also not thought about the Kathy comic strip. In decades.
Yeah, probably haven't thought that since like 1982 when I was 12.
Anyways, so Jack finally tells her that he's in the CIA, and her response is, oh, thank God, I thought you were having an affair. It's like, why would he have a gun if he was having an affair?
Yeah, I thought that too.
Protection like, from crazy ex-boyfriends?
He flew specifically to Moscow to have an affair with and has a gun.
Mm-hmm.
That's even a bigger stretch than the comic strip.
Shaverin is working to execute his plan. So he sets it into motion. We go over to Dearborn, Michigan, where there's a Russian immigrant family. The son has a job at the auto plant, and we find out they're all activated sleeper agents, and they get the code phrase of lamentations and know that it's time to wake up.
Yeah, so they're like the Americans.
Mm-hmm. Or yeah. Black Widow's family at the beginning of her movie.
Yep.
So they start burning all of their, you know, important documents. The son goes out to tie up some loose ends. He sees that there's a guy following him in a car and kills him. And the guy who was following him was FBI.
Yeah, this part was scary. It reminded me of Patriot's Day, where it's like, hey, can I come talk to you? Stab, 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 stab. I was like, oh, my God.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. This guy has looked familiar. I'm trying to send something that I do not, I can't, like, let me look him up.
While Christian's looking that up, in the next part we have the classic CW, my favorite part of every CW episode, where they say, you lied to me, and the other one says, but I lied to you in order to protect you. I will never get
Smallville
sick of it.
Conversation.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Smallville, it's all of them. Smallville started it, though.
Yeah. Oh! He's in Stranger Things. He's Alexi.
Oh, really branching out there.
All right.
From one Russian to another.
Oh, that's at a random. He is also the A400 crewman in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, presumably the one who, like, finds Ethan Hunt as he's about to, like, pop out the back of the plane.
Yeah, someone that's you funny. Recognize.
Yeah. I didn't recognize him for that, but I definitely recognized him from the Stranger Things. I was like, he looked familiar, and I could not place it. Yeah, so we have this scene of, yeah, they're going over the plan, and then also, like, Kathy is insistent that she's going to come to the dinner, and Jack's like, no, why would you do this? Why would I let you do this?
It's, like, totally insane.
And I like how Harper is there, is like, you know, you just wasted 8 minutes of time, of all of the time that we're supposed to be using to plan this thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite lines that I'll say for later.
That
was in this scene.
So we have an awkward car ride to the dinner, and we flash back to them in bed. We're not sure how long ago this was, but Jack is, you know, proposed. See them. We don't see Kathy's answer in that moment.
I think they said it was 3 years ago.
Oh, was it? Oh, maybe. I remember. Okay.
Yeah, it was like a little on the screen, like real quick.
Yeah. But so back in the car, they make a scene about the ring and, you know, that he's asking her to wear it, and the driver's watching all of this go off.
Did they ever explain why Kathy wouldn't marry him? Because I remember he says at one point, I would tell you what I do, but you'd have to marry me first.
Probably because of all the things like the ticket stub and all that she didn't know if she could necessarily trust him.
Oh, one hand washes the other.
Or maybe she was just one to put her career first.
Or that, yeah. But at least from what we're told in the movie, I would assume that.
Yeah.
We have the dinner with Shaverin. Big scene. He's drinking heavily and insulting Kathy.
Yeah, he's making a jerk out of himself. Which, you know, you always like when the characters do that. When our heroes pretend to be someone they're not.
Mm-hmm. And Kathy, you know, says she needs to go to the bathroom, but she can't read any Russian, so it's like, is it too much to ask for an escort? And at that point, Shaverin, who we previously heard, likes his women married. So
yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, very interested in Kathy, presumably. You know, goes to escort her to the bathroom, and as they're walking to the bathroom, someone, you know, knocks into Shaverin and takes his wallet.
See, there's other CIA people there who could have done the infiltrating.
Except none of them knew the layout of the building. None of them, yeah.
It is nice that he is a team. Mm. It is kind of cool. I appreciate that.
Everyone's got their skills.
Yeah, yeah.
Particular set of skills.
So Jack gets the wallet and gets the access card. And they make it back to the from the bathroom to the table where Jack insults Kathy again and then leaves. So Jack gets into the building as Kathy is flirting with Trevin to keep him at the table. And Jack narrowly avoids, or does he avoid, getting caught by Sherevin's assistant.
Yeah, this was cool. I like when he goes in and the faces clearly don't match, but oh good, the guy on the inside is the one who's working the door.
Mm-hmm.
So they're one step ahead of the audience.
Yep.
And I also liked how the security chief immediately detects when he goes in and mm-hmm. does that like 180 degree turn on the road.
Yep.
I like yeah, I liked the line about hitting the red lights. That was good.
Oh yeah. So Jack plugs into Sherevin's office, and yeah, that's when the security chief gets an alert. Also, Kathy diagnoses Sherevin with cirrhosis, which and apparently he might have 3 months left to live, if that.
Yes, that's right. She's like his skin's all like messed up or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yep. Yeah, she noticed all the different symptoms and whatnot, which, as a doctor, you know, made perfect sense.
As an eye doctor, though?
Well, but she also had to go through,
okay.
you know, yeah. residency and everything else. So there was probably a bunch of other different things besides physical therapy that she needed credit for.
True. I know. I'm just trying to poke holes.
Mm.
But yeah, so Jack needs some sort of partner code from someone. So he calls up his buddy who helped him, who he helped flirt with the girl, his crush at the beginning of the film, who passes him off to his boss, and he's able to get into the system and copies the data.
Yeah, this part was great. I think, actually, this is my favorite part, when he's trying to deal with his work buddies, and his work buddies are helping him out. I thought that was fun.
Zach, for someone who said, like, the very beginning was that's the only good part of the film. You seem to have a lot of favorite parts.
I don't think I said it was the only good part. I said I think
you definitely
I'm pretty
did.
Sure I said,
roll
we'll
back
the tape.
The tape.
I'll check the tape. Don't you think I won't?
Mm-hmm.
But I like this part as well.
Okay, yes. Yeah. He copies the data, and the security chief is on his way. The main elevators are now blocked, so they need to figure out an alternate way for him. So he goes in the private elevator in Trevin's office.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And,
well, the forces are closing in on him.
Yep.
He's one step ahead.
And so Sherevin's secretary comes to the table at the restaurant, which is thankfully just right across the street, and it's telling him, look at your telephone. And there's a word in Russian that I should have deciphered, but I did not. I can read Cyrillic, but I have no idea what the word actually means.
I mean, it's, oh my god, alert, Jack Ryan's here.
Also, I'm updating my Cyrillic, so it's been a bit. But yeah, so Jack is escaping on the fire escape while Harper is handling sniper duties.
Yeah, that was crazy. We just start shooting people.
Yeah, yeah. But he hands off the equipment to Gemma Chan, who I don't know if her character even gets a name.
Gemma Chan?
I think they called her Control, which is cool.
Oh.
It was a cool name.
Was she the one on the phone?
Her character's name was Amy Chang.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I know it's on the subtitles that says Chang.
Huh. So do we think she was the one who was, like, talking Jack through, and when he was like, you know, I don't know where I'm supposed to go?
I think that's her.
Hmm. Well, no. I'm going to push back on it, because I don't think, because she's got, well, actually, I'm trying to remember if she has a British accent in this movie or an American accent, because she is British, naturally. But she could have put on an American accent. I don't know. I would have to go back and watch it again, which I don't know that I will. But yeah, so Gemma Chan's character also like bumps into Sherevin at she's leaving and puts the wallet back in his pocket.
Nice. I liked all the spy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is why we're here, after all.
Yep. Yeah. And so Sherevin stops Sherevin and the assistant and Kathy all find Jack outside of the building. He says, I apologize for my behavior. I was drinking a lot. And they like frisk him, don't find anything on him.
Mm-hmm.
And tell him he's free to go.
Yeah, what a move. Brush passes left and right around here.
Mm-hmm.
So the only slight problem I had was like, okay, Jack just went from being a major jerk to all of a sudden super apologetic. It's like, oh my God, that 10-minute walk I went on was life-changing.
Clearly he was pretending to be a jerk, right?
Right.
You're saying that it's weird that nobody else picked up on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're trying to send the data to back to the CIA. They find out the cell order is in 18 hours, so that the attack must be happening sometime before then, which would be 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Okay, good. We get a time lock.
Yeah. And as they're trying to send the data to the CIA, Shrevin's men attack the safe house, capture Kathy. Jack chases after them, and we find out that the engagement ring has a tracking device in it, and so does Jack's watch.
Very sneaky. Mm-hmm. Very sneaky.
Now Jack is being directed over the radio to where Kathy is. He calls up Shrevin and tries to negotiate him with him, tells him that they haven't actually sent the data to the CIA yet, so they still negotiate. And Shrevin threatens Kathy with putting a light bulb in her mouth. It's very dangerous.
Yeah. So this was kind of wild.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this kind of stands out from the rest of the movie because it's like so intense and scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know collapsing the U.S. economy and killing a bunch of people in a terrorist attack is really bad, but it's also very abstract.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you don't really come close to it actually happening. So basically what I'm saying is I didn't like this part. It was kind of upsetting. But it was also
very effective.
Very engaging.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's not just your standard, like, you know, regular light bulb. It's like one of those fluorescent-looking things. So there's a lot of tubes, so a lot of pieces of small glass. The gist of it is basically that if she, you know, I don't know how he does it, but there's this like particular point where on the jaw where he can contort it and control Keira Knightley's mouth and use it to either keep her mouth open or like jam her jaw shut. If he puts the bulb inside her mouth, then she, you know, bites down, all the pieces of glass will go through bone and gums and lungs everywhere. Yeah, it's bad.
So I want to know where the writers got this. And I'm not saying the FBI should investigate the writers of this movie. Maybe check the backyard, check in the shed. Uh-huh. But I'm not saying that either. Because what kind of mind would come up with that?
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it in a weird new way to die kind of way.
Right.
So Jack is in a car chasing afterwards, but ends up crashing that car. He has to catch up on foot. And he does, like, apparently, I don't know how Harper knows that they have to loop around, but they do. And when he does, he, like, grabs something and smashes open the window and knocks out the driver and grabs Kathy. And, like, punches Shrevin, who's in the back seat still, but, like, doesn't, but they let him go. Why did they let
him go? This part was good. I liked the chase. It was very good.
What I liked, too, was the level of panic that Jack was in. It wasn't like he was like Tom Cruise or anything in any of the Mission Impossible. It was like, you know, calm, cool, you know, doing his thing, weaving in and out, dropping some one-liners here and there. He's freaking the hell out.
Mm-hmm. It was a little bit like a video game, but not too bad.
Mm.
It was okay. All I got.
Fly home, and as they're still in the air, Gemma is directing other agents to go after the sleeper agent son, who Jack realizes is actually Shrevin's son, and his name's Alexander.
That becomes clear.
Yeah. So Alexander goes to the auto facility where he works, kills one of the drivers of one of the vans, and takes the van. Jack manages to track down Alexander. It's basically, this is when you see him actually use his regular analyst session on steroids, because it's in a compressed amount of time, and he has somehow all this knowledge that you'd have probably a whole team of people who would know all this stuff rather than just one guy.
But at the same time, it was kind of cool watching it go down. It's like, no, this, and this, and this, and this. And the entire time, Kathy is looking at him like, yeah, that's my man.
I appreciate that they actually had him use his analyst skills. That was, yeah. I like that.
And she's just like, damn.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's, you know, and we've talked about it before on this podcast that, you know, analysis is one of the you know, parts of espionage where, well, it's not as sexy on screen, so you don't see it as much. So when you do have a good scene of analysis, it's really good.
I still think, though, the best Jack Ryan analyst scene, though, you have to kind of go back to Clear and Present Danger. When they're all sitting around and they're going over the dossier and the whole team's there and they're talking different things over. That was...
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that is probably a more accurate version of analysis than this.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
I mean, so them tracking the bomber in a van going to New York. I know I already brought up the Boston bombing. Patriots Day, a movie we covered earlier this year. And by the way, it happened a year before this movie came out, 2013.
Yeah.
Coincidence, right. Maybe.
Now I'm kind of curious of the timeline of when this movie was made.
Like, well, it had been in production for over 5 years.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. I watched the special feature that was thingy, and they had talked about it and how the different script changes and everything. That it took quite a while for them to get the movie made.
In 2012, actually.
Wow.
So, yeah. So before the Boston Marathon bombings happened, track him down and that he's going to New York City. And Kathy realizes that one of the buildings, like in the photographs that they found, is Jack's office in Wall Street, and realize that they're going to hit downtown Manhattan.
I do appreciate that Kathy contributed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, I would have figured that Jack would have recognized his own building, right? But hey, Kathy needs light in there too.
And it's at least in a realistic way. It's not like, you know, later season The Flash, where somehow Iris is the one running the show.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's okay. Oh, she notices something that she would know, and it's not out of her wheelhouse. So Jack and Harper take a chopper to New York. And I did notice that, well, like they make a reference to, you know, have you been in one of these since the accident? And he said, don't worry about me. And I noticed like a little hesitation on Jack. Like it was the first time he references air sickness since Hunt for Red October.
And the other thing I liked in this scene too, that was very Kathy-esque, was like, we'll have someone take you home. And her instant reaction was, no, because if this goes south, I'll need to be at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, poof, no, off she goes to the hospital. She goes.
Yeah, and it makes sense that they wouldn't let her just keep tagging along through the whole adventure.
I was worried about that. I'm not going to lie. I was a little worried that, you know, all of a sudden it was going to be the Jack and Kathy spy show.
We already had some of that already. So
we did. And that was enough.
Mm-hmm. So Shrevin is waiting for news of the attack, and like his monkey telling him, do you sell now yet? They're about to close, and he's waiting for something to happen. Now Joe's to right outside his office, where with a bunch of, you know, police and FBI and everyone, and realizes something isn't right. So he starts looking at all the police vans, touching the paint on like where it's painted, and notices one go past that has smudged paint. So that means it's fresh paint, which means it's probably just applied that day, which could be their bomber.
Yeah, I guess he can perfectly reproduce a police van somehow.
That is not, I mean, if you just get some paint, some stencils, it's not, it's a standard white van, you know, unmarked, you know, well, not unmarked, but before that, it was...
Yeah. And he had several hours to do it, too.
And also, he knew that he would be... This was the plan.
Eventually. So you'd have to go eventually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't have to be perfect. It just had to be good enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, so he takes his co-worker's motorcycle to go chase after the van. And realizes the bomber is not going into the building, but under it. So he goes into a tunnel. Jack gets knocked off the bike. And they plunge into some water that's underneath there. Alexander sets the bomb. Jack catches up and they fight.
This also felt like a video game, by the way.
But you arrive underneath the building, but see nothing there. Because Jack has looked at the bomb and realizes the best way to defuse it is to drive the car into the water.
Yeah, or not defuse it as the case would be.
Yeah, yeah. So he takes the van, is driving, and he notices that Alexander is in the back of the van and is about to come up to him, so he puts the car on cruise control. They have a big fight in the back, but Jack notices that the Hudson is fast approaching, and right about before the car is about to go over, he jumps out of the van, and it goes into the water and explodes.
Oh my god, this just occurred to me. Guys, when have we seen this before? Jack Ryan movie. No?
No.
Patriot Games. Harrison Ford bludgeoning.
On the boat Sean. At the end, yeah.
Yeah, on the boat, so. Right before the boat blows up.
It's a bit of a stretch.
Well, we've already gone the comic strip stretch, so we can keep going with that.
That was great. Okay, so Lance, I have a question. How do you feel about all this Jack Ryan action hero stuff?
Well, I mean, it fits with the character in the younger books.
The younger books?
By that, I mean where Jack Ryan is like the lowly CIA analyst and less of like when he goes up the ranks and eventually becomes president.
Not a deputy director.
Right, yeah, the deputy director is not going to be out there. So from that aspect, I didn't have much of a problem with it because he is still, you know, relatively new to CIA. Mm-hmm. He's young, so there's mm-hmm. that. So I was actually okay with. I was more okay with them driving the mm-hmm. van into the river, as opposed to all of a sudden he's an EOD expert and can instantly, you know, mm-hmm. pull the red wire and, you know, have the clock stop at 007.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, here we go. Do we see any boats in the water after it blew up? Because there's your water. That's the closest we get.
Yeah, the closest we get to an aircraft carrier.
Yeah. Shrevin, obviously, not pleased that his plan didn't work out. He is told that the same Russian minister wants to meet with him again. And so he goes to the same location in the woods. And that minister drives past him in SUV. And he is shot and killed.
Yep.
Jack is in a hospital. Kathy, you know, sees him in the room, and they have a big romantic moment and kiss.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Are they going to get married now, I guess?
Presumably. And
Jack, I mean, he's already told her he's in CIA, so they kind of preempted that role. So might as well get married at this point.
So I'm trying to think. In the, you know, all three sort of younger incarnations, the Krasinski, the Affleck, and the Chris Pine, all three in this case, she got read in before they got married.
Pretty much, yeah.
So we have our last scene of the movie where Jack and Harper are in the White House and are about to brief the president. Actually, I like some back and forth between the president and Harper. It's like, when do you sleep? Never mind, don't tell me, because I want to keep up the illusion that you never sleep. It makes me feel more comfortable. and then Jack introduces himself, James Bond style. And who are you? Ryan, Jack Ryan. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Which is, to me, was like almost the intentional Bond reference versus probably the unintentional Bond reference back to when, and you mentioned it earlier, Christian, mm-hmm. When
he's drowning,
they were talking about. Well, there was that, but there was also the we were talking about Kenneth Branagh's character about, you know, that when they were asking him, it's like, what's his women's preference? Is mm-hmm. he married?
Very married.
Kind of goes back to
yeah.
I think it was
Casino Royale.
May have been Spectre, because, you know, when they asked Bond, like, you know, well, what kind of woman are you attracted to? And he was like, married ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not single was his answer.
Yeah. All right, but with that, our movie ends.
It's directed by Kenneth Branagh. Now it makes sense that he's in it.
He does have a tendency to do that, I noticed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like all of those Poirot movies that he's in, he also directed. Yeah.
Well, he did that with Henry V, too, where he was the director and also played Henry V.
Which I now kind of want to look up and see how many other times he's played like a Russian villain. Is it just here and Tenet? But yeah, so do we have fact versus fiction for us? I mean, obviously this is not based on any Tom Clancy book, so there's no book to compare it to. But I think you've pointed out a few times where there, you know, were things they actually did take from the books.
I mean, as far as like fact versus fiction, I mean, to me, this was just nothing more than really an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't really a whole lot I compared, like, oh yeah, that's not really happening in real life or whatever.
Mm-hmm. All right, Zach, what do you have?
So what jumped out to me was the use of wives in this movie.
Okay. All right.
So Jack Ryan, our CIA guy, enlists his wife to help him, and that has precedence in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So at the Spy Museum, where Christian and I volunteer, we've been doing the volunteer book club. One of the books that we did was called The Spy and the Traitor, about Oleg Gordievsky,
mm-hmm.
who was a spy in the Soviet Union who sent information to the British, and the British extracted him by hiding him in the boot of a Ford Sierra saloon. This is all according to Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. They smuggled him across the border into Finland, and it was two cars driven by two British diplomats and their wives, and they also brought their children along. At one point, they used a dirty diaper that was dropped on the ground to stop sniffer dogs from investigating the car that Gordievsky was hiding in too closely. I told the Spy Museum that they should get that diaper and put it in the collection. It'd be the most famous
diaper
in US
history. Maybe a
little
late for that.
Yeah. So I thought it was wild at the time when I was reading it that they would use the wives that way, because it feels like they could get sent to prison too, but mm-hmm. I don't know this stuff. So then the other example I have is from a book called The Billion Dollar Spy, which was in our upcoming book club. And there's a part where a CIA guy in Moscow, this was in like the 80s or so, his wife is driving, and then he is in the passenger seat of the car, and he jumps out of the car as it's making a turn and runs away so that the KGB won't see where he goes. And then in order to make the KGB think that he's still in the car, they use something called a jack-in-the-box.
Hmm.
Now, my source for this is How the CIA Turned a Sex Doll into a Spy Trick by Jeff Stein, published in 2015. So basically, they used an inflatable sex doll.
Mm-hmm.
I trust that this requires no introduction. And they modified it to a male likeness, added clothing to it, and put it into a large box called a jack-in-the-box, or a jib, J-I-B. And with the press of a button, it would inflate and make it look like a person was sitting in the seat. This was all during what CIA operatives called a gap, where the spy would jump out, the jack-in-the-box would inflate, the car would keep driving, and the KGB would keep following it, at least for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I have for Spy Fact versus
Fiction. Wow.
You're welcome.
Well
that's,
done.
That's great. Thank you.
Actually,
thank you, Zach.
I have one more thing. I will edit it.
All right. Okay.
Which is, there's a part where they say, get on the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, hopscotch, whatever it takes. And I was like, hopscotch? What's that?
Hopscotch. Wow.
So I looked it up, and it may not exist anymore. But
I don't think it does.
If you go to hopscotch.social now, it's an all-in-one social media platform that saves you time. So I think the idea is, you write one thing on Hopscotch and it goes to all your social media like at once.
Hmm.
So it's not actually a social media platform. But it does cost money. So I don't think we're going to get it for SpyFi Guys.
We probably looked at, like, I'm trying to think now. I was like, did we look into Hopscotch? I feel like we did.
But it did not sound familiar to me.
Okay.
So anyway, that is everything I have.
All right. So I've got a few things. Actually, Lance, maybe you can sort of settle this one for me. So when they're in the chopper, like one of the guys, the Bengals fan, is having issues with his harness, and they have a practice of left in, right, twist, click as how to secure that harness. I can't find anything on the internet, but it's like so specific that I feel like it has to be a real thing.
It is.
Yeah, okay, all right.
It is.
Because I like, well, I've been never been on a military, well, never been on a military helicopter in the I've been on a civilian helicopter, and that just has more of a standard harness.
The only thing I questioned about that particular scene is why was Jack, who obviously is an officer, was just hanging on the air, on the helicopter with two enlisted dudes. One of them, whom obviously is brand spanking new.
Yeah, very new.
That and it, from the looks of it, it wasn't necessarily a missile that took down the chopper. It kind of looked more like an RPG.
Ah, okay, yeah.
But, you know, an RPG, if you remember the scene, they're flying in the mountains, which is all over Afghanistan, obviously. But, I mean, the cloud cover was ridiculous. And obviously an RPG would be, you know, a line of sight.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have Stingers or surface-to-air missiles. So it was like, how did that? Did they see them to
lucky
shoot
shot.
Them with that accuracy? Because even if it had been a missile, it would have set off
that's true.
The radar advanced warning detection gear, so they could have made some evasive maneuvers. But nope, it just went right through the cockpit.
I didn't even think about that. Well, thanks for bringing that perspective. Then the last thing I have is about cirrhosis, which is the disease that Kenneth Branagh's character had. Cirrhosis is severe scarring of the liver. This serious condition can be caused by many forms of liver diseases and conditions, such as hepatitis or chronic alcoholism. So probably that one.
Yeah, going with that one.
Each time your liver is injured, whether by excessive alcohol consumption or another cause, such as infection, it tries to repair itself. In the process, scar tissue forms. As cirrhosis gets worse, more and more scar tissue forms, making it difficult for the liver to do its job. Advanced cirrhosis is life-threatening. And this liver damage caused by cirrhosis generally can't be undone, but if liver cirrhosis is diagnosed early and the underlying cause is treated, further damage can be limited. In rare cases, it may be reversed, but given how heavily it's been implied that he drinks, like, actually his... Oh, we didn't even talk about the death of the security guy, did we? It just sort of... Yeah. He says it's, you know, it's the same problems as always: vodka, women, ego. But yeah, so that's what I've got about cirrhosis.
It's, I guess that's why he wanted his revenge on the United States, because then he wouldn't have to live in the world with a crashed economy.
Yeah, well, that and probably more some motivation of why he was willing to go so far. He wouldn't have to deal with it, really.
Right. It's like, I'm dead. What do I care?
Alrighty, so shall we move on to favorite quotes?
Sure.
Yes, Lance, as our guest, would you like to go first?
Sure, thank you. So I mentioned earlier the one scene in the hotel where Kathy realizes, you know, that Jack's CIA, and the three of them are sitting there and they're going back and forth. And they're talking about, you know, using Kathy as, you know, part of the subterfuge. And so then Jack and Kathy start arguing back and forth a little bit. And then Kathy is like, I would like to talk to Jack alone. And Harper's like, this is geopolitics, not couples therapy. You know, time and place. And my other one for, you know, the romantic side of me, Jack and Kathy were talking about things. And Jack tells her, it's like, you didn't pick this life, I did. And then she looks at him and says, but I picked you.
Oh, so
like,
sweet.
Oh my God.
Oh.
I love you, Kathy. Those are my two favorite.
All right. Zach, what do you got?
So I know we've talked about it a lot. I like the part where the two guys say simultaneously, the Bengals. That was funny. When he says to Kevin Costner, you're CIA, and Kevin says, someone has to be. It's a story I've heard on Reddit. It may be apocryphal. It may not be true. Someone met Peter Dinklage, walked up to him and said, you're Peter Dinklage. And Peter Dinklage said, well, someone has to be. And then finally, the part where Kathy calls him after he kills the security guy.
Yeah.
And he survives the first assassination attempt. And she says, how's Moscow? And he says, uneventful. How about you, Christian?
All right. So I've got a few. It's when Harper is trying to recruit Jack, and he says, you know, people don't like you guys very much these days. Waterboarding, rendition. And Harper says, not my unit. And Jack says, you can do better. And so my unit does.
So, yeah, it makes me wonder, when you say these days, did you mean 2014?
No, like at that time, it's like 2003, 2004, maybe. So right about when that was coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, plus you had, you know, think Abu Ghraib mm-hmm. and all that other yep, fun stuff yep. going on around then, so, too.
I appreciate that they addressed the time of what the CIA was known at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we also have, you're a Marine. It's the reason you're still alive right now. Remember your trade captain, you'll be fine. This is when he's like, I think it's yeah. when he says, I'm just an analyst.
And he's more than just that.
Yeah. And then I've got the sort of a back and forth between Shrevin and Jack. You Americans like to think of yourselves as direct, but I wondered if perhaps you're just lewd. Jack says, you Russians think of yourself as poets, but perhaps you're just touchy.
Yeah, that was good.
I don't. Yeah, I guess some Russians are poets. I hadn't heard that one before.
I did not go into that intending to do the Russian accent, but it just came out.
There you go.
You can't help being you, and that's why we like you.
All righty. Shall we move on to our ratings?
So we rate our movies on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis, 1 being Avengers 1998, and 10 being even better than Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Lance, as our guest, would you like to go first again?
Sure. So overall, I'm going to give it 6 martinis.
Really? I thought before we did this, you really didn't like this movie, and you were mad at Christian for making you do it.
Never seen this movie before this.
Well,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's a little bit of background for everybody. I tried watching this movie twice before and fell asleep both times less than 15 minutes into it. But once I did finally watch it, as far as a spy action movie goes, I thought it was okay. That being said, to me, it was just random spy action movie. Like, you could have named the characters like Dirk Beauregard and yeah. Veronica Smith, and you're still going to have the same effect. To me, this it wasn't really a Jack Ryan movie, to be honest. I mean, they made a couple references to try to kind of tie it in a little bit with the helicopter accident and so on and so forth. But other than Jack and Kathy, you could have changed the names and it still would have been the same thing. So because of that, obviously it lost a lot of points for me with that, you know, being the fanboy that I am. But still, like I said, you know, relatively entertaining. So I give it 6.
All right, Zach?
I came in ready to hate it because I thought Lance was going to hate it too. And I didn't hate it, but I also didn't think it was especially good. Like, there were a couple of parts that were kind of neat, but it was mostly sort of boring. And also there were no aircraft carriers. So that's a bit of a downgrade. So, yeah, it was like generic, average, boring, whatever. I guess I didn't hate it, though. I will give it a 4 out of 10 martinis.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, it didn't do much for me.
I will say that I just ran. I was like, you know what? Let me see what I graded previous Jack Ryan movies. Lance, first be prepared to kill Zach right now. He gave Hunt for Red October 5.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I don't know you.
Bye. I thought it was okay.
I don't know you.
I did like the book, though. I think I might have been biased because I enjoyed the book quite a bit.
Okay. All right. All right. Does that win him some points back? Does he earn his life, Lance?
I'm going to
get assassinated in the streets of Moscow.
All right.
Stay away from umbrellas, not in the rain.
So, this, yeah, I think I'm going to echo where everyone's sort of been. Yeah, as a action movie, it's fine. There was nothing too really special about it. There are a few moments that, you know, were good. Like, I did like the tradecraft and the, you know, pickpocketing and that sort of stuff and going and, you know, you know someone being the distraction while someone else is doing the, you know, breaking into the thing. So that was good. Yeah, I think this movie had too many climaxes because really have the climax of the movie once they've broken in and they've gotten everything. And then you add on the action scene of in the car chase with the light bulb. And then you have the fights or figuring out where the van is and, you know, the fight. And then you have, you know, driving away and the van exploding. I think it was just too many at that point that it just all sort of blended together and it really wasn't distinct. The best fight scene and action scene really is that first scene with the in the bathroom fight, which we already pointed out makes no sense why it happened. But as a scene, it's by itself, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like as because there's no movie to compare this to, like, even, you know, even though the Jack Ryan show also were not based on movies, you know, they definitely took inspiration from them. Much
definitely.
Specific seasons took inspiration from different books and parts, more so than this did at all. Like, you know, making up a brand new mentor for Jack. Yeah. So I'm going to give this probably just a 5 out of 10 martinis, and that it's, you know, it's fine. It wasn't anything notable, but it wasn't terrible.
I will say, though, I did like Chris Pine a lot better as Jack Ryan than I ever did as Ben Affleck.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I thought he was all right.
Yeah, I mean,
he had more of what I would anticipate, you know, Jack Ryan's personality.
Okay.
To me, it was a lot more similar to Alec Baldwin. Just with blonde hair.
All right, anything else to discuss, guys? Lance, thank you for joining us here on the Spotify, guys. Do you have anything you would like to plug before we move along here?
Well, since it's been a while, I always have to plug in my cat rescue, especially Fancy Dogs and Cats Rescue Team. Always looking out for, you know, adopting senior cats. Kittens always get the attention because they're cute and cuddly. Senior cats need love too. And they typically will make better pets than the kittens, I have to say.
Very nice.
And where can we find you online, Lance?
I do have my Instagram account, TyPilot13, where you also see various cat pictures as well as fun Star Wars and James Bond stuff.
Very nice.
Cool.
Well, thank you for joining us. You can find us on social media at the Spotify Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at our merch store at redbubble.com. We also have a YouTube page now where podcasts are uploaded automatically. You can find new episodes that way. Until next time, I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And we are the Spotify Guys, signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Spotify Guys. If you enjoyed our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. The theme song from this podcast is Mistake the Getaway by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Films, books, and television shows reviewed by our podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
This is a personal podcast. Any views, statements, or opinions expressed in this podcast are personal and belong solely to the participants. They do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the participants may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. Any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.
You can find our podcast on social media at The Spotify Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.